Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Man About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Is my mic on?
Yeah.
My mic is not on.
Rachel's mic isn't on. I'm Chris Cousby.
I'm Mary Isaacs. And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts on a weekly journey through fermentation here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And we're really excited.
Archived here, Stitcher, iTunes, and anywhere you hear podcasts.
Episode 225. We're really excited to be here. It's the first episode of 2018. Going forward, we're going to have a couple changes. We've been very, very busy with the brewery and things of the like. So we're going to actually slow down for this season so we can put some attention to Fifth Hammer and make sure that we continue with the righteous fun and organization that I think we've kind of been rolling with.
For the brewery.
Well, look at you guys are toying with which ones are on and which ones are off. Welcome back to the microphones, Rachel.
Sorry, we might have some testing bit issues.
And here's Vitor to save the day. There it is. Connection.
Hey.
All right.
Anyway, we have been struggling since opening the brewery and tasting room on September 20th. We've been struggling before that, I guess, but
time management.
Yeah, some of you know out there that I have a full-time day job that's unrelated to anything, any of this. And then Chris is, of course, full-time at the brewery, but I also am helping out at the brewery. There's a lot to do when you're a small team and you're...
Yeah, but we also want a little bit more bandwidth in life to be able to do the home ferments that we preach on here. Like, we haven't had much time to be able to...
We need date nights.
You
know what I'm saying.
Might expand the family.
Yes, date nights are very nice.
We're going to adopt Rachel. We're excited about that. That's okay, right?
Is it legally allowed?
I don't know. Can you have four parents? I don't know. Is it legally allowed? Who cares?
Who cares?
You know what is legally
allowed? Doesn't
matter. You can enter our New York City's largest homebrew competition, Homebrew Alley, by going to homebrewalley.com. We're accepting registrations right now, and we are going to be judging it on February 10th, I believe. February 9th and 10th. We'll be accepting entries straight up until February 3rd. Homebrewalley.com to enter your entries. You can drop them off at Fifth Hammer. It's going to all happen at Fifth Hammer. There's going to be a public award ceremony. We're going to have fun for the day. So even if you aren't a homebrewer and you want to support your fellow homebrewers, come to Fifth Hammer on the evening of February 10th for the award ceremony that night. It's going to be very fun. It's put on by the New York City Homebrewers Guild. It's in its I believe 11th or 12th year now. And if you are an HA or BJCP certification sanctioned judge, we need your help. And if you would like to help steward, we need your help with that too. So homebrewalley.com.
Two other announcements. We have a couple people that have been on the show or that we know pretty well. They have books either out or coming out. So the first is Jeff Cialetti, who we had on a while ago. He is a great writer. He knows a ton.
Like 2 years ago?
Time flies, man. Anyway, his newest book came out at the end of November. It's called The Drinkable Globe, The Indispensable Guide to the Wide World of Booze. And basically covers like the planet and all of the booze that goes, you know, I mean, everything. Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Drinking adventurously.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it's a continuation in that journey.
Yeah, so it's a really cool book. And then also our good friend Joshua Bernstein is coming out. His book is coming out in spring 2018. And I think we're both maybe in it to some degree. I haven't seen a copy of it, but it's called true. Homebrew World. Its subtitle is Discover the Secrets of the World's Leading Homebrewers. So hopefully we'll have actually Josh on sometime later to talk about once the book comes out. But that's not out yet, but it's coming. So just a couple things to keep in mind. I will just say something I don't make New Year's resolutions, but I like to make goals or projects. And one thing I mostly consume books via audiobook because I walk around a lot, or if I'm knitting or cooking, you can listen to a book. It's really hard to read and saute stuff or read and knit. So let's just get that out of the way. I'm an audiobook person completely almost exclusively at this point. So one of my New Year's goals is to listen to more nonfiction books. I consume a lot of fiction books, but not that many nonfiction books. So my first of the year is called I Contain Multitudes, and I'm about halfway through. And
What's it about? What's going on?
It's about the microbiome. It's by Ed Yong, and it's absolute. Listen, if you're listening to this show, then you're interested in fermentation and I think everybody listens to this show would be definitely get a lot from this book. So it's called The Microbes Within Us and a Grander View of Life. And it goes into microbiomes from humans all the way to octopus. It's an absolutely fascinating book. I think it's really well done. Particularly, it is a science book, obviously, but it's pretty general. I think anybody could read or listen to this book and get a lot out of it. It's not super technical. Things are very well explained, and it's also really well balanced. So it does talk a little bit about probiotics and some of the studies that have been done, whether they be in mice, but it goes through, hey, what are the pros and cons? Like, what do we know? What do we don't know? What has been proven? What hasn't been proven? And there's really more unknown about the microbiomes of the world than there is known, but I absolutely, absolutely recommend it so far. It's called I Contain Multitudes, The Microbes Within Us and a Grander View of Life by Ed Yong.
And if you're interested in all of those things, we're throwing the second annual Fermentation Festival on February 24th. Super excited about that. It's going to be in conjunction with the New York City Brewers Guild, which is in charge of running New York City Beer Week, which starts that day, February 24th. Actually, February 23rd to March 3rd. All sorts of events throughout the week, including the Fermentation Festival during the day on the 24th and our giant opening bash invitational in the evening, both at the Brooklyn Expo Center. Speaking to science, we've added a couple of things for the Fermentation Festival, including a science corner. The home musicians, of course, will be playing. There'll be a mini mead festival. There'll be a homebrew festival. There'll be
kids area.
Yep. And
a lot of samples, a lot of stuff to buy. So this is a good time.
Yep, we're having a bookstore.
Yeah, there's maybe certain fermented products that you haven't tried. This is a great place to try it. And then you'll have the option of taking some home with you as well. So we'll have a lot of vendors, which will be fun.
Darn straight.
Yeah.
No. Ah.
Ha. Ha. Okay. it's the wire. Yeah, and I'll actually be there this year, so
yay!
It should be fun.
Yay!
I'm excited to go, so everybody save the date. The Expo Center is a really great it's a great area. It's real big. It's got lots of space, so everybody come on down. There's plenty of room for everybody.
Okay. What are we doing today?
Oh, so Mary and Chris have day jobs, I do as well, but my day job is podcasting. So I went out to PodCon in Seattle back in December, which was a really fun podcast festival that was made by the people from Nightville and the Green Brothers and the McElroy Brothers. And while I was out there, I got to talk to some local fermenters. So I got to talk to Julie O'Brien of Firefly Kitchens. That's Firefly Kitchens, not Firefly Ferments, which I kept calling it in the interview. And she just has this line of really interesting krauts. And she talks about her journey and what she's making. And I believe she just came out with a cookbook as well. So, yeah. Do we want to play the interview?
Yeah. Play it, Sam.
All right.
Or Vitor.
Play it, Vitor.
Rachel Jacobs, and I'm in the beautiful Emerald City of Seattle, Washington. We're here with Julie O'Brien from Firefly Kitchens. Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. So thanks for joining me today at this random convention center. Yeah, so let's talk about Firefly Kitchens. So first of all, like, you have a very interesting background. You spent a long time in Alaska.
Yeah.
You're from Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your background in fermentation, and how did you find out about it? Like, let's just start with, like, your background in fermentation.
Well, it's funny because I grew up in Alaska where I really knew nothing about ferments. I mean, we did a lot of foraging in the sea, and my dad hunted and fished, but there was not a lot of vegetable processing and fermentation. So I really didn't learn about fermented foods until I was in my 40s, and I was taking a nutritional therapy training class, and I was being trained to work one-on-one with people to change their eating through, you know, change their health through eating and then supplementation. And the first week of class, I had Sally Fallon's book, Nourishing Traditions. That was required reading for us, the first 69 pages. And of course, I just got sucked in. And there was three or four splendid pages in there about fermented foods and the wonders of them. And I was blown away because I've been a health nut my whole life, or kind of my whole adult life. And I'd never heard that fermented foods were good for you. And this was, you know, so this would have been back in 20, yeah, I mean, it was 12 years ago. So we started Firefly in 2010, and so it would have been 2008. So basically, I just started fermenting. My dad was going through colon cancer at the time, and I remember thinking, God, here's a food that's loaded with fiber and vitamin C and vitamins and enzymes and minerals, and it's vegetables. You know, it's like, why isn't everybody just eating this every day?
You mean sauerkraut?
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty shocking to me still, 12 years later. And now, though, there's this huge awareness, right? Mm-hmm. People are talking about it, and they realize there's some legitimacy to the health claims of these foods.
Yeah. So what's the first ferment you ever made?
So our yin yang carrots was the first thing I ever made. And it was basically based on Sally's recipe in her book. It's just carrots, ginger, and Celtic sea salt. So that is it right there. And it was so much fun. Yeah. I brought her a little jar.
It smells really good.
It is. It's just so simple. And that's just the magical thing about fermented foods, is the flavors change with time. And so, you know, here you take these fresh, crispy, sweet carrots and add some ginger and salt, and then you just get a totally different flavor profile after 30 days, which is we ferment for a minimum of 30 days at Firefly.
How long are the ones I have in this jar here? How long are they aged for?
Oh, geez. You know, I actually pulled that little jar out of my fridge because I didn't want to bring you a whole big one because I knew you weren't going to be able to take it on the plane. That's probably about, I don't know, 3 months old. And it's good. It's really good.
I am very much looking forward to, like, putting this on, like, a sandwich or something. What made you want to, like, make these as, like, a product to sell, or, like, make a career of this?
Well, that's kind of I always say this is sort of my midlife crisis of starting a food company, you know, because it's the last thing I really set out to do. I was setting out to kind of chill out a little bit and work more with people and food. And so starting a food company is quite an undertaking because I really knew nothing about it before I got started. I just really believe in these foods. And I met a guy through a mutual friend years ago who had similar passions of believing in these foods. So we started Firefly together in 2010, but he has since moved on. And I still just have that belief that these foods are life-changing and everybody should eat them just about every day.
Okay.
That's what really got me started.
Okay. And it's been like, how has the industry been?
The industry has changed a ton since 2010. I mean, we spent that first year sitting at farmers markets talking to people about these foods, you know, kind of the proof of concept and just selling the jars that we were making. And you'd have people come up and say, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever had. This is like the old country, or these are like the foods that I grew up with. So it was a very small percentage of people who really loved the food or who were aware of it. And so we spent, it seemed like 70% of the conversations we were having with people were all about the education piece and talking to them about why they should be eating them and why they're so good for your gut and how they're full of probiotics. And for me, because I am such a lover of food, I just kind of took it to that next level and was trying to tell people, like, just blend it up and mix it, you know, just get beyond the hot dog or the brats, because these foods, that's what people think. People think of sauerkraut and hot dogs, and it's changed a lot, you know. But yeah, the industry has changed a lot, because now you have companies that are, you know, buying fermented foods, or they're okay, let's start fresh. How I think the industry has changed is now there's a huge awareness, and so now everybody's looking at it like, oh my God, this food is so good for you, but it's so hard to make it. So let's put it in snacks and chips and things that, you know, let's figure out a way to ruin it and make it make it easy to sell a lot of it, you know, and that's kind of what we're up against.
Are people making sauerkraut chips?
Oh yeah.
Don't the probiotics die when you bake it?
Yeah, I think everybody has their own vision on that. But I think that there's definitely the best way to eat them is just raw. You know, you ferment it and then you just open a jar and you eat it. So, but, you know, you think about it, here is a growing trend, right? We all know we need more probiotics. So guess who's on board? The pharmaceutical companies are like, oh, we should be able to figure out a way to, you know, to make more money here. So, yeah, let's not go down that path, because it can get quite crazy.
Yeah, actually, let's go back a little bit. You were talking about teaching people at farmers markets, but now you have classes. Is that right?
Yeah. So, well, we actually have a cookbook called Fresh and Fermented, and that came out about 3 years ago. It was published by Sasquatch. We actually teach people how to make the 7 flavors that we make at Firefly and sell, and then we have 85 recipes in there. That you know, from smoothies to breakfast to wraps to rolls to sushi and even desserts. What? And so we do teach at Firefly. I love teaching, because I just feel like everybody has the right to good health, and there's so many people struggling with health issues. Well, this food can get you off of pills. You know, this food is...
For certain things, yeah.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I had a woman tell me once, she got her daughter off of prescription laxatives.
Whoa.
Her 6-year-old daughter...
Her 6-year-old daughter was on prescription laxatives.
Yeah, well, but look at what kids these days are eating. Look at the pasty white food that so many people just live on. And so, anyway, so I have heard countless stories over the years of people just saying, God, I was in so much pain, you know. I just, my stomach felt like it was in a big knot, or I would have this burning, and then I ate your product, and all of a sudden I felt better. Feels good.
So you have 7 recipes.
We have 8. We have eight now.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So the carrots one, you kind of like adapted from this cookbook. How did you develop your other recipes?
Well, you know, a lot of them are just kind of basic recipes that are out in the world. Like the classic is just, that's pretty much as basic as it gets, because it's just cabbage and salt, right? Mm-hmm. And then our caraway is just cabbage salt with caraway seeds. We have ruby red. Ruby is just cabbage, beets, carrots, and green onions. So I think a little bit of it is just experimenting in the kitchen, or seeing something or tasting something and just going, oh, wouldn't this be great? You know, like I remember tasting a kraut once, and it had dill in it, and I like dill, but it seemed a little pickly, so I'm like, what about coriander? And so we threw some coriander in there, and then I'm like, oh, wait, this tastes so good, but kale's so damn good for you, and turmeric, let's throw some of those in there.
Oh, you've done a kale kraut.
Well, it's our Emerald City kraut, so I just put the kale in there to kind of green it up a little bit, and then, of course, the turmeric, so good for you, so we threw that in there. And I always learn the hard way. I'm like, if a little's good, let's put more in. And then, of course, it doesn't always work that way.
Not for turmeric.
Yeah.
It doesn't work so well. Yeah, so, like, you draw inspiration from, like, trying other foods.
Yeah, right. Oh, for sure. Other things you see. And then, you know, like, the bigger thing for me is, you know, whenever I eat anything, just about anything, unless it's something sweet, I'm like, you know what this needs? And it seems like everything always needs kraut on it. And my family thinks I'm crazy, as well as a lot of my friends. But I just think it's this bright, fresh, tangy, tart umami. It's like, if you think about how many recipes that people make where you need an acid, you need either that citrus or that vinegar boost. Think kraut instead of vinegar or citrus. And one of the things that has been like a struggle for me, now that we're finally getting all this recognition as fermenters, you know, within the health community about, oh, this stuff is really good for you. It's loaded with probiotics, you know. Yeah. Pickling is still what really, people talk about that a lot, and people confuse pickling and fermentation, and you know, they're just not the same thing.
No,
and
yeah.
And I think that I always say the picklers are riding the fermentation wave, and you know, it's just way easier to get you know, a flavor by just throwing an acid and then sugar. But there, I think there's really more of an art to actually doing the natural fermentation.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. Yeah, art of fermentation.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, we love Sander.
Yeah, he's lovely. Yeah. Oh, man. He actually, it's funny about kale kraut. So apparently he talks about how, like, you can't really make kraut from dark greens.
Yeah.
And people have ever since been trying to prove him wrong by sending, and, like, every time they see him, they're like, I made you a kale kraut. So, like, we interviewed him a couple of, like, a year ago, probably. And he just had jars of kale kraut. And he's like, please take this. Because it's good, but, like, you can only have so much of it. It's so strong.
It's so intense.
Yeah.
It's funny. I remember when we first started, there was a man who would come to the farmer's market, and he would say, I don't even remember where he was from. He had this thick accent, and he said, you can ferment without salt. And we're like, yeah, not really.
Yeah.
You need the salt to keep the bad bacteria at bay. So, you know, I know there's, you can add seaweed, and there's all these different ways you can reduce the salt. But basically, he brought us some stuff that he had made, and he's like, here, try this. And, you know, and it pretty much just tasted like rotten vegetables. And that's what happens if you let food just sit out, right? It's just going to decompose and it's going to rot. And so we kind of had to laugh because he tried to prove us wrong. But yeah.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world. Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
I live in Brooklyn, and mostly we talked a lot of New York-based fermenters.
Yeah.
But like, what is the scene like here? Is there a lot of like home fermenters?
Yeah, no, there really are. You know, when we started 8 years ago, there was only one brand on the shelf in the stores that was healthy and raw, and that was Rejuvenative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those guys were great. I think they've been around for over 30 years, and they have these crazy labels just full of all sorts of information. And their jars were about $14 a piece. I remember just thinking, wow, and it was organic, and it was the real deal. Now there are heaps of fermenters all over. There's probably, we're the only ones right in Seattle, but on the islands and surrounding community, there's like four or five other fermenters that, you know, are selling in the same grocery stores that we are, you know, in the natural food stores. And then as always happens, you know, a company will grow a little bit, and then somebody like General Mills or Kraft or somebody... Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did with one of the brands, and all the fermenters out there know, so I don't need to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's what you're competing against. You know, you go to these natural food shows or these fermenter, you know, fermenting conferences, and then, you know, you can tell the one that, you know, it's like the one that doesn't belong there that has the money to have the big fancy booth, and, you know, all of a sudden it's... they're not doing it the legit old-fashioned way anymore. Yeah. You know.
Actually, speaking of food shows, I think it was it the Carrot Crowd that won the Good Food Award?
Yeah, the Carrot was our first one. We were just a year in to production, and the woman who runs the farmers market here in Seattle said, "You guys, this food is really good. You should send it to the Good Food Awards." So, boy, that was. I think that was 7 or 8 years ago now, and our Carrots won, and it was such a treat to be able to go down to the Bay Area and celebrate and be with all these other local, you know, or small food producers who are doing food the old-fashioned way. You know, it's tasty, authentic, responsibly made food. So it was really great. And then our Cortito, our Ruby, and our kimchi, actually those flavors all won a Good Food Award as well.
Oh, actually, can we talk about your kimchi a little
bit?
Yeah. There's a trend now to make more vegan kimchis. Mm-hmm. What's your process for making your kimchi?
Well, our kimchi, I always say it's, we're not trying to compete with traditional, you know, Korean, really flavorful kimchi. We're trying to just, you know, because we started this because of the health benefits, mm-hmm. we're really trying to make it mainstream and make it a flavor profile that everybody will like. And so we don't use shrimp paste or fish sauce. So we didn't really set out to be vegan, but it just worked out that way. And we also are using green cabbage instead of napa. Mm-hmm. So it's really more like a spicy, flavorful sauerkraut. And some people love it for that reason, and then other people don't like it for that reason. And so it's one of those things that you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know. But we do have so many people say, "Oh, my God, this is the best thing I've ever had," or "I'm so happy to finally have a vegan kimchi."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually really, I mean, all of my friends who are Korean are like, nothing is ever going to beat what my mom's kimchi is.
Exactly.
So, like, why compete with that?
Exactly. Well, and that's what I tell people, you know, like, we're not trying to steal recipes from other cultures and make money off them. I mean, we're just trying to celebrate them and say, look at all these cultures that are so healthy that have been making these foods forever, just using salt and foods that are abundant, you know, in their area. And I don't know, I still feel like we're celebrating food and wisdom from a long time ago. And we are living in a pretty screwed up food culture right now. So here's one small little thing that people can do for themselves every day that is just a really positive, bright, illuminating thing.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a local place to buy the gochu, the chili powder?
Oh yeah. We have fantastic markets around. We have Wajimaya is a really great local market, and you can definitely use that. And the Korean red pepper, I mean, we used a dry pepper, and it's critical. You know, we were trying to find an organic, all of our products are organic. Our kimchi is 99.6% organic, but we still cannot call it organic because of the goddamn laws. So basically, we tried. We had these awesome Japanese growers. You know, they have a farm in here in Eastern Washington, and we asked them to try to grow us some Korean red peppers, and they tried all these different things, and they brought them back, and we dried them, and they were awesome, but it just is not the same as real Korean red pepper. And it's like the color, it's like the sun and the love and the history is all baked into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, let's go back. Can I talk about the desserts?
Yeah.
What kind of, like, kraut desserts do you have, or, like, fermented desserts do you
have? So when I was working on the cookbook, I knew I wanted desserts in there because it was a cookbook, right? And everybody eats desserts. So I thought, you know, so much about food is texture. So my mom was down visiting from Alaska, and I said, "Here, we take this jar and dump it into the Cuisinart and blend it up, the classic, so it's the consistency of applesauce." So she waddles off and does that and comes back, and she's like, "Here." She goes, you could market this as crapplesauce. And it was great because, you know, if you think about food and texture and, you know, when something's blended that way, you don't have to digest it so much. So I said, now I have this applesauce-like texture, and so I can put it in everything. So I made up a goat cheese apricot tart. Whoa. And what I did is I just took the kraut and again, it's just cabbage and salt, and I drained all the liquid out. And you keep that brine, right, because that brine is divine. But I drain it all back in the jar, and then you just have this fibrous, you know, kind of salty, textured kraut, right? Mm-hmm. So then you can just stir that in, and I'm not putting a lot in, but it doesn't take a lot to get that little probiotic boost or that flavor. Yeah. So, I'll squeeze out the brine and then stir in, you know, a quarter cup or a half a cup into a lemon curd and mix it with cream cheese. And that is really divine. I mean, every time people taste that when I'm doing a cookbook sampling, they end up buying the book because they just want the recipe. And I'm like, it's just got blended up kraut in there. But the key is to drain all the brine out so you're not, you know, diluting whatever you're making with the salty. Yeah. But it's your friend, you know. And this leads me to what we kind of coined the term velvetize. Mm-hmm. Velvetize it. So by blending a jar, you're getting this velvety texture that you can just stir into your favorite hummus or guacamole or salsa. Mm-hmm. So you're getting that probiotic, that fiber, that bright, sunny flavor. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to dominate your hummus or your guac. You're just going to get those back notes, that salty. Yeah. So it's a really great way, especially for people trying to get their kids or elderly.
It's like vegetables.
Or, right, right.
Like beet brownies.
Yeah. Or you have, you know, stomach issues or teeth issues and you can't chew it up. It's a great way to just grab a spoonful and pop it in. And yeah, it's good.
So what's next for Firefly?
We've been playing around with salts.
Yeah.
And
like finishing salts?
Yeah, yeah. And so they're pretty magical. They're pretty exciting. And we're just rolling them out in January. So right now they're only available on our website. Mm-hmm. But they're spectacular. And there's nothing like them out there because it's surprising to me. You go look at all the fancy flavored, good quality salts in the stores, and even the ones that are, you know, that have spices in them, people aren't even using organic spices. And I'm like, come on, people, you know, if you've got this great quality salt, why don't you just spend an extra quarter and put organic ingredients in there to flavor it? So it's basically our couple different types of sea salt and Himalayan salt, organic spices that are actually in the kraut, and then some of the freeze-dried kraut.
Oh, in
so
the salt.
Yeah, so it's unbelievable. Just like sprinkling a little bit on scrambled eggs or potatoes or veggies or meat, on anything. Popcorn's the easiest way.
Yeah.
So
that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to just have something that's shelf stable, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Where do you source your salts from?
We get them from a local salt, you know, a provider here in the mm-hmm. Northwest who, you know, brings them in from all over, you know, all over the world. The main salt we use when we're fermenting is Celtic sea salt. So mm-hmm. it's the real deal, the big wet gray. I mean, we spend a ton of money on it, but it's just so worth it to us because we think that really does make a difference in the end flavor.
Wow, that's really cool. Have you noticed any trends in fermentation in the fermentation community around Seattle?
Well, you know, I think we all, once you start making this stuff, you realize the brine. You know, the brine is what protects the kraut during the fermentation process, and then once we pack it into the jars, you end up with this excess brine, which is basically kraut juice, right? And people have been using kraut juice to heal ulcers. People use kraut juice. All my Russian friends that I've met have been like, oh, this is so good for hangovers. And then, yeah, I mean, it's or just using it as a cocktail enhancer or a salad dressing mixer. So it's really good. It's really good. And so a lot of people are taking their brines and selling them. You know, but there's all sorts of little tonics and things that are popping up. And I really believe the future is going to be krauts kind of blended up and mixed into things, which is really what it's all about in my book, Fresh and Fermented. You know, because whenever I make like our tapenade or anything that has kraut in it and blended up, the velvetized version of it, people freak out and they're like, oh my God, I want to buy this. And I'm like, no, this is just a sample. Here's the jar. Here's a recipe. Just go make it yourself. But people don't want to do that. They just want to buy what they want.
It's true. They don't have time.
Yeah.
Do you need like a special blender for that, or will just like any food processor do?
Cuisinart, Blendtec, yeah. Or even chopping. Like our Emerald City kraut chopped up with a can of tuna and a little mayo or olive oil. It's so amazing. It just adds this bright, fresh, bodyful flavor to it, you know. So you don't need any fancy materials, you know. You can just chop, mince, and then it's going to be in a different texture for you to use.
Okay, that's really cool.
Yeah.
How big batches do you typically make them in?
Well, we are using 55 barrel drums, 55 gallon barrel drums. And you know, we're going through about 2,000 pounds of cabbage a week. So we're making more and more all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have any new krauts that you're thinking of making?
We have a new salsa that we're making, and it's just cabbage and beets, and then all the fresh flavors that are in salsa. And
so like
it's
jalapeno?
Yeah, yeah. And there's jalapenos and lime and cilantro and garlic, and it's really good. It's really, really good. So it's a good gateway kraut for people who don't think they really like sauerkraut. But I just feel like when there's a will, there's a way. And I think, you know, just eat a little bit every day and see what happens.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Where can people find out more about your products, and where can they buy your book?
Fireflykitchens.com. And we ship our products all around the country. So you can get a 4-pack. And now our salts are on there. We ship up and down the West Coast, and we're in Whole Foods, you know, up and down the coast, minus the Bay Area. And we're all over in the Northwest.
All right. And where can people buy your book?
The book is it's for sure on Amazon and on our website. But my guess is, you know, food-related cookbook stores would definitely have it. And I think that people would probably be likely to bring it in if somebody asked if you have a favorite bookstore in your area.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet. It was fun. Us. Yeah, maybe I'll come to Brooklyn. I'd love to come to Brooklyn and share some of the Firefly love.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us know if you're in town.
Okay. We'll do.
Need to film then about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Thanks for the interview, Rachel.
No.
On your trip.
My pleasure. Please send me to Seattle again.
All right, so we're almost out of time, but Rachel has actually been doing a lot of fermentation. So Rachel brought in some rosemary sourdough bread that you made. So when did you get your starter or start your starter?
I was stuck in the house for a while because of the storm and because of like in between work stuff. During the storm, I was like, I should make some sourdough bread. I've got some time. So I called up my friend, Andrea, who was like, she was at Ferment, and she goes to a lot of things, and she makes a lot of really interesting things. I'm like, do you have sourdough starter? So I picked it up last Sunday from her, and then I just immediately started making some bread. Sourdough takes like 3 days to make because you have to leave out some of the starter with like a little bit of water and flour.
So you basically make it like a sponge.
Yeah, basically. And then you leave it out for like 6 hours, and then they call it the leave-in. And then you add that to the flour and whatever other ingredients, and then you leave that for like 3 hours, and then you put in, then you shape it, and then you put it in the fridge overnight for like 8 hours, and then you bake it in the morning or whenever you can. So it takes a very long time, and it's not like a long time of activity. It's right. Just a lot of waiting.
And I think there's different ways, because I haven't made it in a while, I'll confess. But that's so funny, because I just recently, things have calmed down a little bit, so we can have a regular schedule. We cooked. Chris cooked last night. I cooked a couple times. Anyway, it's been insane with the brewery. I mean, I don't. Anyway, so we haven't
had a
regular schedule.
Talking about the brewery later this season, because it deserves a story.
But I just recently pulled out some pineapple juice. and some rye flour. I realized I had some. So I'm going to go make my starter. I like to make a starter from scratch. It's really easy. We've talked about it on the show before, but I'm going to do that tonight. So maybe I can do. And there are a lot. The cool thing about sourdough.
Is that the preferred method from the sourdough book as well?
Yeah. So that's the book that I've been using, is Sarah Owen's book called Sourdough. It's amazing because not only does it have like 50 sourdough bread recipes, it also has like sourdough focaccia and sourdough buttermilk biscuits
and it's
just and donuts and like tarts, and it's just amazing. But yeah, so she has a method in there using raisins, which she spoke about on the show as well, which she, I think she prefers like you make your own, but also like every starter that you get from somebody else like has a legacy and has a taste.
Yeah. So, but that's not but studies have found that that doesn't always stay that way,
because
it's adapts, little micro
bites to whatever is in your kitchen.
Yeah. So you end up with the same starter anyway.
And you already said, I just have one that somebody, that Andrea gave me.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's close either way. I'm just saying, like, I kind of like it. It is, if you don't have access to a starter or if you have busy schedules or whatever, it is pretty easy to make your own starter. And you also said you just did kimchi.
Just made kimchi for the first time. Back like a year and a half ago, we had Mama O's Kimchi on the show, and they gave me some of this kimchi spice that's basically just like this rub that you rub on vegetables, and then it makes kimchi. And I went on, I bought a Napa cabbage from my local Chinese grocery store, and it was enormous, and I put in, I think, scallions, some radish, and some carrots, and I ended up with over a half a gallon of kimchi, and it's been sitting under my sink. They say leave it for a week, but it's been really cold, so I left it. I was going to go home today and basically taste it, see if it's good, and then put it in the fridge. But awesome. It's very bubbly. It took like 10 minutes to make. It was really, really great. I also made yogurt and granola. I had a very busy fermentation day. I also tried to make mead. I don't think the yeast was alive anymore, so I don't think it's working.
Well, I look forward to trying as many of these things, at least the kimchi bread.
Yes, I will have so much of that.
Awesome. All right, so that is it for this episode. We will be back in 2 weeks. That is Monday the 29th.
It is the 29th.
29th, yeah. So we'll be back Monday the 29th.
That's right.
I won't, but you guys will be.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
Some of us will be back, you know. We'll be. Anyway.
We'll just have the cardboard cut out of Kuzme.
We can do that. I've got a beer dinner and Freestyle Mondays, last Monday of every month at Pianos. Woo.
Woo.
This is why you got to put this stuff on our shared calendar. I had no idea.
It is on our calendar. Last Monday of every month. That one doesn't change. Anyway.
No, the beer dinner. Anyway, cool. So we look forward to being back in 2 weeks. We're going to try to set up a great season for you guys. And if there is somebody that you would like us to have on, or you got something interesting, please send us an email. Reach out. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and our Gmail is femenaboutit@gmail.com.
Yes, and we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. There's all femenaboutit.
Thank you very much for listening to episode 225 on heritageradionetwork.org. You've been listening to Chris, Mary, and Rachel on Femen About It. Femen About It.
'Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio.
Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.